Thank you, Phil. Hello, everyone. Minister, distinguished guests. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the original custodians of our land, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and pay my respects to their elders, both past and present, and acknowledge the people of the very many nations who live in our city, and acknowledge such an eminent audience. It's a great honour to be invited to speak to you about what we've been doing in the city. So I do welcome this opportunity to relaunch CEDA's annual discussion looking at Sydney's long-term future. It's something that the City Council has been directing our attention to since 2004. When I became Lord Mayor, I wanted a long-term vision and strategy, one that would be endorsed by our diverse communities living and working in our city. In 2007, we undertook the largest ever community consultation in the city's history. Thousands of residents, businesses, government and statutory authorities, visitors and educational and cultural institutions offered their insights and their opinions. We asked SGS Economics and Planning to lead a team of experts in fields ranging from planning to transport to environment to culture to governance, design and economics to critically assess Sydney's strengths and weaknesses. The result was Sustainable Sydney 2030, which has ambitious targets and stringent measures to keep us on course. Our consultation had shown that 97% of people wanted us to take action on climate change. And this is back a decade ago, to future-proof our city. They also said they wanted a strong economy, a city that supports the arts and connects people to each other and the world. Those ambitions were summarised in the words green, global and connected. Sustainable Sydney 2030 is the cornerstone of everything we do and everything we've been doing since that time. We constantly refer to it and update it as circumstances change. It's helped Sydney develop to meet a growing population and new demands for services, even as we deal with the major challenges such as climate change and affordable housing. Our wide consultation and the fact that we're transparent, accountable and corruption-free and that we take action on commitments has contributed to our strong track record and the broad acceptance of our agenda. We've delivered debt-free budgets, invested in property and managed our finances so that we can fund new infrastructure and services. Since 2004, we've approved $25 billion worth of private sector development. And importantly, thanks to our design advisory panel, it's high-quality development that adds to Sydney's appeal and to its international reputation. We've ensured that the focus of our residential development is in urban renewal sites so that we can protect those heritage villages, sites like Green Square, the Ashmore Estate and Harold Park. And it's matched with new parks and open spaces and facilities for a diverse and growing population. Since 2004, we've completed over 250 projects, including playgrounds, badly needed childcare centres, theatres, community and cultural spaces, and 130 of our projects have won national and international awards for design excellence and sustainability. We've planted over 12,000 street trees and many thousands more square metres of landscaping and rain gardens. When we were elected in 2004, Green Square was almost moribund. It's now one of Australia's largest urban renewal projects and is backed by a comprehensive and fully costed infrastructure plan of $1.3 billion, including $450 million spent on our community facilities in the town centre. We've invested in a range of public art projects, including the Eora Journey, comprising seven major projects, which with the backing of the First Nations Advisory Panel, which has included an economic development plan. Affordable housing in the global city has been a major concern, especially for key workers like nurses, fireys and other essential services. We've delivered 835 affordable dwellings and there are over 1,000 more in the pipeline. For many years, we've been making the case to extend the affordable housing levy across the entire local government area, as we could only apply it in Green Square and Piemont Ultimo. This has now been approved for public exhibition. This could deliver another 3,600 affordable homes by 2030. A key element of 2030 has been to establish partnerships across our city and internationally. They include the Better Building Partnership, and that's with the owners of over 50% of the major property in the CBD, the 100 Resilient Cities, which was pioneered by the Rockefeller Foundation, and the C40 Climate Leadership Group. That's helping us to reduce our greenhouse emissions and costs for building owners and occupants to learn from other cities. Cities are where we get the big reductions in emissions. Over half the world's populations now live in cities. In Australia, it's even higher, over 75%. By showing leadership in our cities and working together, we can deliver significant action. I was at a C40 conference in 2007 and heard about the results of a new energy-efficient LED light program that the city of Los Angeles had introduced, first city in America to do so. So when we got back to Sydney, we trialled the rollout of LED lights across our park and street lights that we own. We were the first city in Australia to do so, and we've achieved over a 40% reduction in emissions and nearly $800,000 in savings each year on electricity bills and maintenance costs. Now the New South Wales government is encouraging councils across New South Wales to make the switch to LEDs, and recently the city announced a new partnership with Ausgrid, which will see the rest of the streetlights in the city, the ones they own, replaced with LEDs. We'll save enough electricity to power about 1,000 homes for a year and more than $1 million a year in ratepayer fees due to lower energy costs. We've established 110 kilometres of a cycling network with 12.5 kilometres of safe separated cycleways, 60 kilometres of shared paths and 40 kilometres of other infrastructure. Bike trips through our city have more than doubled, and city residents are riding at twice the rate of Greater Sydney. But there is still more to do in terms of connections and destinations. Interestingly, when I was first became mayor, it was the business community that lobbied to put in separated bike networks. They wanted to cycle to work. They didn't want to do a long day's work and then have to go to the gym. They wanted to cycle to and from their home. And they were very keen, and we've seen, of course, all those new developments putting in end-of-trip facilities for that purpose. We've also established car share with a groundbreaking policy that's being used in other jurisdictions. Around 35,000 city residents and businesses are members, 15.5% of licensed drivers. We've reduced emissions in our own operations by 25%, and we've been carbon neutral since 2007. We've helped drive down emissions across our local government area by an impressive 20%. Despite enjoying a period of unprecedented economic growth. Since 2004, the city's economy has grown by more than two-thirds over and above inflation. It now totals about $125 billion, contributing more than 10% to Australia's current economic growth and overtaking the mining sector as the driver of the national economy. Our work has supported that growth and made the City of Sydney the national epicentre of jobs and growth, with job numbers growing by almost 30% in the 10 years to 2016. Independent sources have confirmed our progress, with the city's financial records and plans being reviewed last year by the State Government's Audit Office. In the report to Parliament, the Auditor General noted, and these are her words, and I quote, that the transformation of the city over the past decade has been remarkable and an achievement to be proud of. But we need to make sure that our growth, our prosperity, our sustainability and our livability continue to work together, each reinforcing the other. In the years since Sustainable City 2030 was adopted, there have been a whole range of new challenges arising and some old challenges intensifying. Population pressures bringing their own challenges on social infrastructure. Technology is continuing to evolve and smart cities are becoming more common. At the same time, rising inequality, homelessness and mental illness are matched with increasing levels of obesity and growing one-person households at risk of social isolation. And each season we're seeing record increases in temperature, vast areas of Australia declared drought-stricken, winter bushfires and extreme weather events becoming the norm. Sydney's cultural life is suffering from a range of factors, the impacts of the lockout laws, Sydney property prices have made creative spaces less affordable, and too much regulation is inhibiting new and existing cultural and creative activities. We know all these issues will have significant impacts on the future of our city and our communities. And while Sustainable City 2030 provides us with the strategies that we've needed to deal with many of our challenges, I believe that for the city it's time to look beyond 2030. So that was why last month I put to council, and it was unanimously endorsed, my mayoral minute to proceed to another community-wide consultation to develop a new long-term strategic plan looking out to 2050, informed once again by research and the best possible technical advice. The framework used for 2030 won't change. It's helped deliver great achievements for our city and has been used by other cities as a model for developing their own plans. I was really pleased when I arrived in the city of Wuhan, it's a second-tier city, but, you know, it heads up a province, I think, of 60 million people. And I was presented by the mayor with Sustainable Wuhan 2049, because that was the anniversary of the Great Change in China, based, he said, on Sustainable Sydney 2030. And I thought that was one of the greatest honours we could have, influencing a major city in China like that. So our new 2050 plan will include our original 2030 framework and those targets, while including new targets for the decades to 2050. Our targets will be informed by an extensive consultation program, again, and input from experts. Working out what Sydney will look like in 2050 must come from our community, from our residents, our businesses, our workers, our visitors, our students, and even our children. When we did 2030, we even sent sort of Doctor Who-type phone boxes round to schools and TAFEs to get views on what they thought about 2030. Well, we'll do again this similar sort of thing for 2050, I think, and get those children telling us what they want. It must be informed by the aspirations of the community. It must be informed by thorough research and through real collaboration with business and other levels of government. It is what we did in developing Sustainable City 2030. And I think the results show what can be achieved when you've got good governance, when you've got long-term vision, and you've got sustained ethical leadership. I'm proud of our work so far, and I look forward to developing Sustainable City 2050, and hopefully many of you will be involved. It's encouraging to see CEDA working towards a long-term vision, and today's meeting provides a very welcome chance to hear your ideas about our city's future. Thank you.